Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello. Welcome once again to Tech Talk. It is I, Stephen Scott, back with you once again. Robin Christofferson's here. Hello to you, sir.
Hello, I'm glad to be back too.
Yeah, it's nice to be back, isn't it? We were kind of separate for a week or so. We were obviously here for the Global Accessibility Awareness Day episode, but, you know, we've kind of been a bit apart, and also we've been apart from our emails inbox as well. They are building up like you wouldn't believe, Robin.
We've been very remiss.
Yes, but we're going to solve that this week. We're going to get back onto the emails. We're also going to be talking about ORCAM. Lots of our listeners, as you all know, Robin, have been getting in touch with us, sharing experiences of ORCAM. And this week I got the chance to grill, and I don't know what kind of mood I was in this week when I did this, but I kind of got the chance to grill one of the ORCAM guys just to get a bit of a sense, because there are lots of apps out there that do very similar things to the ORCAM. And if you don't know what the ORCAM is, it's the little camera that attaches to the side of your glasses via a magnet, and it will allow you to read documents, menus, whatever it is you might want to read. But it's very expensive. You know, starting price, £2,700. It's a lot of cash. So how does it stand up to things like Seeing AI or even Be My Eyes, if you want to think about it in that sense? Where you can get someone else's eyes to look at it for you. Well, we're going to get into that today. Also, we're going to be talking about JAWS and OCR. Very excited about this. You've been checking that out, Robin, haven't you?
Yep, giving it a run for its money.
And if that's not enough for you, we're going to be checking out the news in tech. You know, it does feel like ages since you and I have sat down to do this like this. We haven't even had a chance to talk about Google's I.O. yet, their conference, where now they've pretty much added accessibility, or captioning at least, to everything. We're going to talk about that and your emails coming up on this week's episode of Tech Talk. I always talk over that bit, so I'm just sort of let it play this time. get that final note. Right, let's get into it this week then. So I thought we'd kick things off, and it's kind of all on the same theme about reading, about scanning. It all kind of kicked off for me because a couple of weeks back, I'd finally found a copy of a book that I really wanted to read. It's a book called Glasgow's Forgotten Village, and it's by an author called Nori Gillibrand. And the book is out of commission. It's no longer out. It's out of print. It's not being able to, you can't get a hold of it now. Not available in alternative formats. And it really intrigued me because the thing is, Robin, in the town I live, there's a big train station called Glasgow Central Railway Station. And underneath it at one time was a town. And it's been called Glasgow's Forgotten Village because everyone's forgotten it's there. And the thing is, it's actually still there. There are remnants of this town that still exist. The cobbled streets, the shop fronts, they're all there living underneath the train station, out of view.
Wow.
It's incredible. And, you know, there are lots of cities like this. I mean, London is like this. Edinburgh is like this as well. But I think they've tended to bank more on that. They've tended to use it more as a tourist attraction. Whereas Glasgow, they haven't, and apparently that's because of the rats that live down there. anyway, it's a fascinating subject, and it's a book that I've really wanted to read because this story fascinates me. And for that reason, I got a copy of the book, which was brilliant, and I started scanning it in using my scanner, my PC, and my Kurzweil 1000 software, which is the scanning software I chose. The only problem is, and it's nothing wrong with any of the software or the hardware, the problem is that I keep listening to every single page as I scan it in. So I'm kind of reading the book as I'm scanning it, which is maybe not the best way to do it. But I'm very excited about it, and for that reason I thought I'd bring up reading this week, because you have been looking into JAWS and some of its OCR features, which a lot of people might know about to some degree, although a lot of people don't, Robin, do they?
No, that's right. So this is a review of the things that are built into JAWS, both for OCR, optical character recognition, so text recognition, and also the ability to recognize objects within images as well. So yeah, obviously JAWS isn't for everybody. It's quite expensive, but it's worthwhile knowing actually some of the really useful features that you do get for your money.
Okay, well, let's hear it.
This is a quick demonstration following on from our recent scanning discussions of what you can do that's built into JAWS. I know that lots of people don't use JAWS, and I think there is something similar in NVDA, but I wanted to bring this to people's attention because it's very useful. So I've got a little folder here with two images and a PDF. And the first thing I want to show you is how you can do OCR, optical character recognition, on documents that only have images in them. And to do that, you have to open up a PDF, for example, in Adobe Acrobat. So let's first of all look at a PDF with an image and no text. There is text in the image, and sometimes we do get these. What I've done is I've taken a document, a fact sheet, an AbilityNet fact sheet, which is top 10 accessibility tools, and I've taken a photograph of each page of text. Well, somebody cited has, and it's a very good, clean photograph. So this should give us a good impression of how good JAWS's built-in OCR capabilities are. So let's see what it's called.
Our top 10 accessibility tools, left paren image only, right paren dot PDF.
So I'll hit enter on that.
Reading order colon combo box. Infer reading order from document left paren recommend.
I'll just hush that up there. And we're all familiar with that dialogue that comes up when Adobe Acrobat Reader detects that a screen reader is running. So I'll hit enter on that.
Our top 10 accessibility tools left paren.
I'll just hush that up. So now we are in the document and...
blank.
It's blank.
Blank.
The document is empty. So the keystroke for JAWS to recognize text within a document such as this is... JAWS key plus space, then O for OCR.
OCR.
And then D for document.
Started.
Each time you hear that tick, it's recognizing
the page.
Our top
10 accessibility tools, left paren image only, right paren dash OCR results. Our top 10 accessibility tools. If tools we've found to help with re-eclog your VAS to help you bulge your...
I'll just stop that. Now we are in a virtual viewer. If I arrow down.
Blank. IEIS Web Accessibility Toolbar. IEIS Web Accessibility Teeter is an extension layer internet eglerer.
Ooh.
10 opens ran is all available right paren. Is an extolman useful tool and can be my low check a amber of issues wiggling a web pagan.
Oh my goodness. It's very clear text, guys, but it hasn't done a particularly good job.
Blank.
At all. Now, when I do find JAWS's built-in OCR abilities quite useful, is when I'm on a screen where I can't get to the text that I want to review. Now, you can turn on the JAWS cursor and you can move that around and try and find text. But sometimes it's really handy to just do OCR on the whole window or the whole screen. So if I hit escape to get out of this virtual viewer.
Our top 10 accessibility tools, left paren.
And I'm back in Adobe Acrobat Reader now. So instead of recognizing the whole document, which would do many pages and bring it into a virtual viewer, I can actually do JAWS key plus spacebar, then O for OCR,
OCR,
then W for window.
Started. Finished. JAWS.
Now, this is slightly different. It doesn't bring it up into a virtual viewer. It actually puts the JAWS cursor on the screen and allows you to move around and click on things. So if I arrow down,
File Edit View Window Help.
File Edit View Window Help.
Home Tools or Top Accessi Sign In.
Home Tools, etc. A few mistakes there.
Registered Sign 1/1z or Top 10 Accessibility to Convert PDF Filesto Word.
So we're reading some of the toolbars, etc. there. So if you had a dialogue that came up, for example, and you wanted to grab all the text within it, you could do Jaws key plus space, then O, then W, and it would recognize all the text on the page, including pictures of words that the Jaws cursor wouldn't otherwise recognize. And then you can move around and you can actually click now on any of these. And if it's clickable, it will do something. And before we leave OCR, one final keystroke would be Jaws key plus spacebar, then O, then S, and that will do the full screen. So I'll hit the PC cursor.
PC.
And I'll close this document.
Items view multi-select list box.
Now, before we move on from OCR, text recognition, to picture or object recognition, I should also mention that if you have a scanner, or indeed a camera, connected to your PC, then Jaws can also grab an image from the camera of some text that you have underneath it, or can start a scan of a flatbed scanner, for example, and can do a similar OCR treatment to what we've seen a minute ago. And that is Jaws key plus spacebar, then O for OCR, then A for acquire image. If I did that now, though, it would just complain that I haven't got a camera or a scanner connected to this computer. So be aware that Jaws can also initiate a scan if you've got a suitable device attached. Now, the next thing that I want to show you is new to Jaws 2019, and it's called Picture Smart. And I've got a couple of pictures here.
Robin Christofferson and the Duke of Cambridge.jpg.
So we're on a file here. This is when I received my MBE from Prince William. Now, I have focus on this file, and the way that PictureSmart works is that you do Jaws key plus spacebar, then P for PictureSmart.
PictureSmart.
Then F for file.
PictureSmart is in progress. Heading level 2 caption is a group of people standing on a rug. Heading level 5 total number of faces in this photo is 8. Heading level 4 these objects probably appear in the photo. Man, person. Heading level 3 these tags describe the photo. Carpet, clothing, furniture, person, red carpet, rug, suit. Heading level 3 these tags probably describe the photo. Event, man, standing. Heading level 3 these tags possibly describe the photo. Flooring, people. Heading level 3 these tags vaguely describe the photo. Crowd, hall.
There you go. So it's recognized a few things in there. It didn't know Prince William. You know, it doesn't recognize actual people. It's just looking for objects. So yeah, that was me and him and a few other people in the kind of entourage who were on the stage at the time. And then I think there might be some crowd in the background, not sure. But anyway, that's that one. We'll do one more. I'll hit escape to get out of this virtual viewer.
Robin Christofferson and the Duke.
If I arrow to the next file.
Robin and E.T. Berlin, November 2017.
So this is a picture of me on a bicycle. It's Elliot's bicycle from E.T., that film. And E.T. is actually in the front basket, and we're flying through the air, the sky in the background. So what we're going to do this time, instead of F for file, there's actually a couple of other keystrokes you can do. You can do C for control. So if we were in a web page now, and we landed on an image, whether that's just a graphic or a link, graphical link, or a button, for example, which has got an image on it, then we could do C, Jaws key, space, then P for Picture Smart, then C, and it would analyze that control. And that works in a Word document as well, which has got images in too. And so that's brilliant. But I have actually copied this image to the clipboard. Now, that's not by just doing Control C here. So it's not copying a file to the clipboard. I opened up this image in a photo editor, and I did Control A, and then I copied it to the clipboard that way, just to show you this last one, which is insert, space, then P for Picture Smart.
Picture Smart.
Then B for clipboard.
Picture Smart is in progress. Heading level 2 caption is a man and a woman posing for a picture. Heading level 5 total number of faces in this photo is 1. Heading level 4 this object appears in the photo, person. Heading level 4 these objects probably appear in the photo, man, shoe. Heading level 3 these tags describe the photo, clothing, outdoor, person. Heading level 3 these tags probably describe the photo, human face, man. Heading level 3 these tags possibly describe the photo, fictional character, sitting, world.
Wow, there you go, a man and a woman. Now, I'm not sure how useful this is because there wasn't useful information in here to be able to identify really what's in the photo there. Other ones might have, you know, if you want to know, if is this a group family shot, then it might say there's 6 people in the photo and a tree in the background, and you might think, oh yes, that's that picture that we took on that day. So I could imagine it would be useful for some instances. In its defense here, the bike, only the very top part of the bike is visible in the shot. So I'll just hit escape there.
Robin and E.T. Berlin, November 2.
Now, the last thing I wanted to show you here is actually my favorite. It's a keystroke I use all the time, and that's virtualizing a window. And there are loads of times you can do this. It works with any window at all. I'll show you, for example, if I bring up the properties of this file with Alt and Enter.
Robin and E.T. Berlin, November 2017.jpg properties dialog.
We're all familiar with this dialogue, and we could tab through this and it would give us a certain amount of information, or we could do insert B to read the box in tab order, etc. But what could be easier than bringing all that information into the virtual viewer? And to do that, it's JAWS key plus Windows key plus W.
Virtualizing window. Robin and E.T. Berlin, November.
I've just stopped that. So yeah, it's really straightforward now. I can just arrow down through this virtual viewer.
General security details, previous versions.
That's those tabs.
Type of file, colon, JPG file, left paren, dot, JPG, right paren. Opens with colon, photos, change, dot, dot, dot. Location, colon, C, colon, backslash.
I'll just hash that up. So it brings all of the information into something where you can just copy and paste any of this text, read it at your leisure. Really, really powerful. Brilliant. So that's insert or JAWS key plus Windows plus W. Insert, Windows, W. Great.
Well, I am astounded, not by all of the keystrokes, not by all of the mentions that you've given to JAWS there and the various options, the Picture Smart, the OCR. I'm amazed that you've watched a movie, Robin Christopher. You told me you don't watch movies. You've seen E.T.
When I could see. Yeah, I watched a good few movies, but not since, no.
No, well, you obviously liked E.T., which...
Yeah, who doesn't?
I know, who doesn't like E.T., exactly. Yeah, I'll be honest, out of that, I was kind of thinking, why would you bother with pictures? Because it sounds great as a feature. I was kind of, the way you described it, you know, I didn't get the sense you were pushing me towards a view on this, but I got the impression that I was going to get something amazing out of this, and I didn't. You know, I was kind of still a bit confused as to what the image was, what I was supposed to be getting from that. I mean, it was almost like the reverse of Pictionary. You know, it was instead of giving you an image to work out what it is, you know, we're telling you what's in the image. Now, figure it out. It'd be a great party game at Christmas, but I'm not entirely sure it's a great feature for trying to analyse images.
Yeah, and I think this might be one of those instances where the smarts behind Picture Smart on JAWS is not cutting edge or has significant limitations that you don't necessarily see in, you know, the seeing AIs of this world, which have the latest and greatest engines behind them. So I don't know. And I certainly wasn't impressed by the results that we got from the OCR there either. So don't get me wrong, JAWS's features are really, really useful from time to time. And as I mentioned there on the Picture Smart side of things, there might be some occasions when, you know, you just need to know, okay, I've got two pictures here, which is the one of the car and which is the one of the group of people, that sort of thing, because I need to send the right one to someone ASAP. So options are good, choice is a good thing, but yeah, I think that probably accurately reflects the current status of those functions that are in JAWS 2019.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I use, I try to download images from my website when I'm ever putting a picture up on my blog. And I always want to put a picture to associate with it so it looks great, or maybe it's a picture relevant to the story or whatever it is. And I like doing that, but the problem is I can never be entirely sure what it is I'm downloading. And I don't know if I would trust that to tell me what I was actually looking at. That's the thing. But in saying that, interesting, I will say, though, I have used the JAWS OCR feature for scanning PDF documents, and that is brilliant. That is really good. But I think, would you say that the... Like, I'm talking about using Kurzweil 1000 earlier to, you know, import a book, to scan in a book. You wouldn't recommend JAWS OCR for that, would you?
I think if it's good clear text, it might be fine. But I can't guarantee it. I haven't tried that feature. I think once it's grabbed that image, whether it's a nice crisp image from a flatbed scanner, which you would hope it would be, or a well-taken one from a camera that's attached to the computer, perhaps on a giraffe stand or something, over a document, then it should do a good job. Having said that, that PDF that we tested there, somebody created that PDF by taking really crisp photos of the image, and we saw the result there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, for me, in Windows 10 in particular, and other people might agree with this or might have found this experience, moving the JAWS cursor around the screen often doesn't tell you anything. Windows 7 used to expose all the information on the screen quite happily that you could, you know, use the JAWS cursor to explore, but I often just get blank in Windows 10, and there the OCR a window feature is a lifesaver, because whereas something before is completely inaccessible at whatever accessibility layer it's working at, pixels are still there, and doing OCR on a whole bunch of pixels gives you the kind of results that we saw when we reviewed that screen of the Adobe Acrobat Reader. So that's a lifesaver as well. But yeah, as I mentioned, my absolute favorite is virtualizing a window. JAWS key Windows W, guys, remember that one, because that just brings everything instantly into the virtual viewer, and you can just search for text, you can read it, whatever you want to do. It's brilliant.
And as you said there at the beginning of that review, that you think that that's available on NVDA. You're absolutely right, of course it is. And on Narrator, we're going to be seeing something like this coming soon, where you will have a seeing AI type feature where it will be able to look at an image and identify it. The purpose of this, I think, is for like Facebook memes, you know, anything like that that you might want to read. Because, of course, a lot of these images pop up all the time, don't they? And we've no idea what the joke is. So, you know.
Again, whether it'll be able to say, oh, well, that's, you know, Grumpy Cat, oh, who passed away last week, by the way, guys.
I know.
I don't know if it'll be that smart, but what I do know is that it will reflect the smartest that is possible today with Narrator, because it will have the same engine as Seeing AI. It's Microsoft. So, yeah, there might be times when you'll want to briefly bring up Narrator to do the biz on an image, for example. So it might be the reverse of what we've had to use Narrator for in the past, which was basically to get another screen reader up and running.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, let's kind of stay on that theme of reading. OrCam is a device that a lot of people may have heard of. It's a camera that attaches to your glasses and essentially allows you to read menus or written text, maybe a book even, or a newspaper, all by just pointing your head at the chosen piece of text and letting the OrCam do the work for you. That's a really interesting piece of kit. I've got one on loan at the moment from OrCam to try. But I thought I'd put some questions about this to our trainer, the guy who actually came out to train with me. He's also a sales guy for OrCam. His name is Ian White. And I got the chance to sit down with him this week for the Daily Connect programme to talk to him about OrCam, what it is, what it does. But on here on Tech Talk, I thought we'd maybe take that conversation a little bit further and talk about the comparison that is often drawn by devices like this. I mean, OrCam starts at £2,700 for the My Reader version, which is essentially just for reading, which of course is brilliant if that's what you want. But then equally, if you wanted the slightly better version, which has got the facial recognition on it and all of that, well, that's up to £3,500 to buy. It's a considered purchase for sure. But how does it stack up against these other apps out there that are free? And well, that and a number of other questions are the ones I put to Ian White from Orkan this week.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that is the phone apps that are out there now that are pertaining to do a lot of this kind of stuff. How does Orkan compete at the price level that you are setting your device at? How do you compete with those apps out there, and what are your view on those apps?
Oh, good question. You put me on the spot here. I guess you've played baseball before, because that's a curveball you've just thrown there. apps. Yes, there is a lot of great apps out there. I use quite a number of them myself, and I know that you're going to ask me about CNAI.
It's hard not to mention, isn't it? Because, I mean, these are... Yeah. I know you're going to tell me the reasons why Orkan is different, and that's really important, but it is important also to I guess, acknowledge these apps, because they are out there, they are doing these similar tasks to differing levels of success, depending on who's using what, depending on the hardware. You know, there are a whole range of factors involved in how successful those apps are. But I just wonder how you, as a company, can say, right, okay, well, that's all great, but actually, Orkan's what you want.
Well, it's down to the individual person, obviously, how they want to lead their life while using assistive technology. I for one wouldn't bend anyone's arms if they said, you know, we want to use TapTapSee, or we want to use CNAI or Be My Eyes or anything like that. You know, everybody's got a choice, and that's what's unique about Orkan. People have the choice to purchase Orkan. Just like people have the choice to buy digital hearing aids. In the marketplace, there is literally hundreds of thousands of people across the UK who purchase the digital hearing aids, and nobody bats an eyelid. However, when it comes to assistive technology for blind and visually impaired people, it's a different ballgame. Like you say, it's the elephant in the room style of thing. So Orkan, our top price is $3,500, and we do have a huge amount of people worldwide who use Orkan on a day-to-day basis and are very happy with it. And, you know, we acknowledge the fact that CNAI and other products are out there, and, you know, obviously it's our job to keep ahead of the game, and that's why we have a permanent research and development team working hard in the background to do various different things to make sure that Orkan is kept up to date on a month-to-month basis. It's a wearable product. You have to have the option of wearing Orkan on a permanent basis if you wish to do so, because you can have it running all day if you want, and it will pick up things like street names or shop signs or anything like that, or people who you know. You're in a supermarket, will pick up somebody like your next door neighbour if you've got them loaded into your camera. And that's all very well. However, you know, when it comes to using your smart device, as someone who's severely sight impaired myself, I always worry about the safety aspect of doing that. Take my phone out of my pocket, hold it up in front of something.
Yeah.
To take an image or to find out where I am, and then somebody comes from behind me, swipes the phone out of my hand, and off we go.
And that's unfortunately a real reality these days.
That is a real reality, and it has happened,
phones.
And I know people that it's happened to.
Yep.
That have taken their phones out, and because they're visually impaired, they become an easy target, because at the end of the day, what chances have you got to identify someone like that in a lineup? You don't. You know, so that is a real reality. And of course, when we talk about the CNAI product, and I for one have brought this up on several occasions, and I have been really shot down in flames because of my view on that particular feature. Whereas with Orkan, I can just clip it off my glasses and stick it in my shirt pocket, and nobody has a clue that it's there. But, you know, with a mobile phone, mobile phones today are easy targets because they're very expensive. And you know what? They have everybody's life in them. You know, they have appointments. They have, some people keep their bank details in their phone. Some people keep personal information in their phone, photographs, videos, whatever. And these are all easily accessible, that because people find a way to get into your mobile phone. That's just the hard reality of the truth. Whereas with Orcam, it's high-end encrypted, and you just can't get any information out of Orcam whatsoever. So if you don't know what you're doing in an Orcam, it renders it inoperable for you.
And what's the future? I mean, let's say, for example, and again, here's another curveball for you. I'm in that mood today. But, you know, let's say that Apple next year bring out smart glasses, which is looking likely. I mean, there's a lot of rumours kicking around that 2020 seems appropriate in the title, that they will bring out a pair of glasses. Whether or not that happens, who knows? But the thing is that that kind of wearable technology is becoming more and more the fashion. And when a big company like Apple comes along and does it, then everyone takes interest. And I think for products like yours, does that mean that, that you become an app? Or does it mean that you kind of have to think about what you're doing as a company in that respect? Because, of course, then you have the competition from, you know, all the arguments you've just made kind of become slightly out of date because the technology has moved on. Or is that just the challenge of modern world with this continuing evolution of new technology on an almost monthly basis?
Well, as we all know, technology evolves on a day-to-day basis. You know, I mean, I began my sight loss journey 8 years ago this week. And in that space of time, so let's take the last 7 years, because it took me a year to get back onto my feet and get myself sorted out. So let's go back, say, 7 years. I hadn't a clue what assistive technology was out there. Now, today, I work for a company that produces assistive technology. They are constantly updating it and working on it in the background to make it better, faster, more intuitive. I use my mobile phone, I use my iPad, I use my laptop, I sync everything to, you know, all my appointments are synced into each of the devices and just everything. I live my life out my smart devices. And that's all because of the assistive technology that's built in there, Stephen, and it makes it easier to do that. So every day, some company out there is producing something, or they're enhancing a feature, or they're doing something to it. And Orcam are no different from any other company. But I will tell you, we do have an app available. At the moment, it's on the iOS platform, and the Android version is in development right now. And what we can do there is we can pair our Orcam up to our smart device, and we can operate the Orcam from our phone.
So that was Ian White there talking to me about the Orcam, and yeah, I did give him a bit of a grilling, if I'm honest, but I was in a bit of a mood that day, nothing unusual there. But I thought it was quite interesting what he was saying about the technology, and I don't think this is unique to Orcam as a business model. I think all specialist tech companies are in some ways being subsumed by new technology, Robin. It seems to be just this thread now that one thing eats the other.
Yeah, I mean, I have voiced my concern in the past about the smaller specialist tech companies not being able to be as current or cutting edge in this area. Mm. And I just think that's a fact. I mean, it's great that they've got a dedicated R&D team, and I hope that they are taking advantage of the APIs that are out there, you know, the Microsoft's Cognitive Services APIs, for example. So, you know, they could be using cutting edge. At the end there, where he said that actually we do have an app, I perked up a bit because I thought, oh, maybe all of the smarts of Orcam are going to come to an app, so that, you know, it would, you know, because their products are very clever, very smart, exceptional OCR and object recognition, looking out for your finger so that you can point at something and it would start it speaking, at the moment only available through this hardware device that you clip to your glasses, then if that level of utility was available through an app that one would hope is a fraction of the price, then that would actually be something really quite interesting. But no, that's not what he was saying there. Right at the beginning where he said, you know, people don't bat an eyelid for when paying for digital hearing aids. And, you know, obviously digital hearing aids are night and day compared to the old fashioned analog ones. That's absolutely true. And you can connect them directly to your smart devices, etc. So that's, you know, it's true that digital is a leap year away from the old analog ones. But I don't actually think that was a fair comparison, because by that, in that, using that analogy, he's saying that Orcam is the digital and everything else is the old analog. And that's just not true. You know, seeing AI and these other ones that he mentioned are as good in many ways, in a different package and perhaps not as user-friendly for the older people, older users. But yeah, so I didn't think that was a fair analogy, really, because they're all much of a muchness. It's just that some are free and some are very, very expensive. So, yeah.
Well, the debate rolls on, and people, I'm sure, will want to get involved in it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Get your view on air with us. We'll get to your email shortly, but first,
news from the internet.
And yeah, we haven't even talked about Google yet on the show. Google had a big event called I.O., which is a thing that happens every year. Normally, I'll be honest with you, Robin, I am bored to my back teeth with it. But this year was actually rather interesting. More for, well, two reasons, actually. One was accessibility, which they referred to two aspects of accessibility that interested me. One, perhaps more than the other, I guess. One was the Google Lens edition, which will only be available on Google Pixel phones, and I believe only in the US initially, but that will roll out over time. And this is the Google Lens app that will allow you to point your camera to something and it will read out loud. Where did we hear about that before? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, yes, Orcam. But yeah, this is exactly what I'm talking about, how one technology comes along and, you know, a big company like this develops something and it does the same. Now, is it as good as Orcam? I don't know. I haven't tried it. But, you know, the fact is that this technology is being developed and, you know, it got a national platform as well on that. So that was quite interesting. And live captioning.
I'm very excited about this and hope that it's coming to iOS as well, because Google is even, you know, they are definitely the market leaders in AI and object and text recognition. They've just got the biggest data set by far. So I would love to see that on all the platforms and, you know, give Seeing AI a run for its money.
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, everything's fighting against each other, isn't it? Live captioning was another one of their announcements I thought was really interesting from an accessibility point of view. I know for us blind people, perhaps live captioning doesn't seem like much, but if you've got hearing problems, if you're deaf, then, you know, this is going to change your world. And I think, you know, I was actually quite glad to hear, you know, other disabilities get mentioned. I think that's appropriate and about time as well. So this is a great thing. And of course, all these smart speakers out there that have got screens on them now, like the Google Home Hub, or what's it called now? Nest Hub Max? Who came up with that? Terrible name for a product. But yeah, so that is going to have the captioning capability. The phones will have it as well. So yeah, again, another wonderful piece of work. It seems that accessibility continues to be a major plank of these companies now, which is brilliant.
And I should also say that the Echo, all the Echoes with screens have the sort of live captioning ability as well. So everything that she would have spoken out can be written to the screen. And I want to also mention that Skype, the standard version of Skype, well, all the versions of Skype now have live captioning. So if you are having a Skype conversation with anybody, there's a little drop down. I think it's called options or more options, something like that. And you can turn on subtitles. And what that does is if you're a screen reader user, you can put the focus on that. And every time someone says something, you can actually hear real time what Skype thinks that person said. And sometimes it's amusing, but, you know, it's really good. And then at the end of conversation, however long that was, you can choose to look at the chat history and it will give you the full conversation. So that, I think, is a mainstream usable feature. So you can get a transcript, you know, rather than madly taking notes if you're doing a Skype meeting, for example, then you can just grab that at the end and you've got a full record of what everyone said in the meeting. And we're on Zoom at the moment here, and exactly the same thing is available in Zoom too.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. The other thing, we did touch on this a bit, so I'm not going to go on about it too much, but we touched on it on our special episode, which if you haven't downloaded and listened to yet, shame on you. It's the Global Accessibility Awareness Day episode with you, me, and Robin Spinks from RNIB as well. And we talked about Google's Pixel 3a, which is the new affordable phone. I wonder if that's what the A stands for, affordable. But, you know, you're getting a very decent phone in there. We did talk a little bit about it last week. But, you know, this is a marked change. You know, we've seen the price of these phones rise and rise and rise. Now, Google have come along and said, Robin, right, okay, let's change this a bit. Let's bring out a phone which is not budget, that is in fact premium, but at a budget price.
Yeah, so they wanted to have an iPhone competitor in the Pixel phones, and they have succeeded to a certain extent, certainly on the quality and the performance. You know, these are undoubtedly as good as the top-end iDevices. They just weren't successful in grabbing the market share. So, you know, they've had moderate success with the Pixel line. But yeah, this is a major development to have one that's half the price of even an entry-level iPhone, for example, with all of the smarts, including Office Lens and all of that sort of thing, mm-hmm. that are unique to the Pixel line. So yeah, absolutely. If you're thinking about Android, definitely look at this. There are so many others and it's a really vibrant environment. But yeah, this one, I can't think of a reason not to go for the Pixel 3a.
Yeah, and the accessibility is good. I mean, I know that, you know, over the years I've been up and down on Android, but I genuinely believe it's a good product. It's a lot more fully featured than perhaps we tend to think of, especially as iPhone fanboys and fangirls. I'm certainly one of the fanboys for sure of Apple, but you know, that doesn't mean that Google is not a good product. It's just that I'm tied into that world now. I bought all my apps, I've bought my music. I'm not changing now. I'm too old. I can't be bothered.
And one way that they saved a bit of money was by going for a carbon fibre case or, you know, body, rather than aluminium, for example, which is what the iPhones are with a glass back these days. But I found myself thinking, well, I wonder what that would feel like. I bet that would feel quite nice. And it would certainly be lighter than either glass or aluminium, so, and it wouldn't shatter as much. It's super strong. So I was actually kind of thinking, wouldn't it be nice if they kind of went full circle? Because I know that the 3GS was plastic, wasn't it? So, you know, maybe, who knows, they'll bring in an iPhone which is much more durable and lighter and win-win.
Wasn't the 5C plastic?
Yeah, but that was, yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay, well, look, when we talk about technology, I think a lot of us tend to think about young people and the latest gadgets and the gizmos and the kind of stuff we talk about all the time. Although I don't think anyone attributes the word young with any of us, but we do try. But, you know, actually, truth be told, the biggest generation of people or the largest generation of people who are actually benefiting from new technology are older people. And that's because of a whole wide range of reasons, including the isolation that tends to be broken down through technology. Jordan Emery has this special report for us.
With 1.5 million people over the age of 50 suffering from chronic loneliness, looking at how technology can benefit the lives of our aging population seems like the next logical step. Research has shown that using the internet can reduce the probability of developing depression by up to a third. Currently, older people experiencing loneliness are 3 times more likely to suffer from depression than people of a similar age who are not lonely. The beneficial link between technology use and reducing loneliness is evidently clear, but 65% of our elders state that they only feel a little confident in their ability to use electronic devices for essential online activities. A lack of social connections is as damaging to our health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Yet 45% of people aged over 75 speak to 2 or less people in a week. Nevertheless, new technologies are paving the way for this to change. One particular tech startup has invented a device that allows older relatives to share photos, exchange messages, or make video calls with their friends and family. It is similar to an average laptop screen, but boasts the benefits of an 8-megapixel camera and a full-range speaker. With only one button and no passwords or logins, it is easy to use for the older generation, who may not be tech-savvy enough to get to grips with the smaller screen phones and the various social media available on them. For those who desire company more immediately, Japanese pioneer AIST have come up with a solution. Paro, the lightweight robot seal, hosts all five senses, so it's able to perceive people, environments, recognize voices, and even respond to words. Although it's able to move its head and legs, the only sounds it'll be able to imitate are those of a baby harp seal. So if it's a conversation you're looking for, these probably aren't the best option. Ultimately, human interaction will never be able to be replaced through technology. However, these tools could act as effective alternatives when direct communication is not an option.
Jordan Emery there. I don't know if I like the idea of a baby seal in my house just sort of making seal noises in response to me. Yeah, interesting ideas there. Okay, shall we get on to the emails? Because our email inbox is bursting.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day.
Yes, we do.
Here's your mail today.
And if you want to email us, you are more than welcome to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We do love an email or two, Robin, and we've got plenty of them to get through today. So let's get right into the mailbox. Producer Andy is with us this week. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin.
Hello.
Right, let's get into our first email then.
So this first question is from Gordon. He says, hi, Tech Talkers. I have a question I hope you can answer. I've listened with interest to demonstrations of the updated Windows Narrator screen reader, including Microsoft Webinar. The trouble is, although I'm running a Windows 10 PC and I've updated it whenever an update comes along, my version of Narrator doesn't match what all the demonstrations show. As a JAWS user, this isn't a huge problem for me, but I'm curious to know why my version of Narrator isn't as smart as the one I've heard demonstrated. Any ideas? Loving the show, says Gordon. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Gordon. I think I know the answer to this one, Robin, but I'm going to let you go first, and then if I'm wrong, then I can hide behind it.
Well, it may be, and he's probably not going to like this answer because it probably means that his hardware isn't compatible with newer versions of Windows, but I think it was 1803 where Narrator started to get smart, so that was the spring update of last year. So if you do Windows key and I to check the version of the Windows that he's using, so that's by going into Windows key and I for settings, and then there is a top item there, system, and in that there is an item called about, and if you go in there, it'll tell you your version number, and you want it to be 1803 or later, preferably 1809, and by the way, guys, 1903 is coming out any day now, so you expect a new shiny look to your version of Windows 10 in the next week or so.
Yeah, I'll be honest, and yes, that's exactly what I was going to say as well. actually, for once it was. But no, the interesting thing is I didn't realise all these version numbers and what they all meant. I didn't realise they were actually dates of the year. And of course, there's the spring and then there's the autumn update, hence the 1803, 1809, and then 1903 and 1909 will come up and all the rest. So it all makes sense in that respect. But these updates don't always come out instantly. They're kind of rolled out over time to all the devices. So, you know, I think I'm on 1809 now, but it's taken a while to get there. And yeah, a lot of the demonstrations, and it was interesting, Gordon mentioned the Microsoft webinars that they've been doing. I don't think they've been quite so clear in explaining that these are actually on future editions of Narrator. And people don't know entirely what that means. Because, you know, you get a Windows update, you think, oh, well, that's it, I've got it. But actually, it might just be a little update rather than a big feature update. So
yeah, and sometimes your hardware isn't compatible.
Yeah.
And if it's a slightly unusual or less common make of computer, then you'll probably be the last person to get that update. And smart listeners or sharp listeners will have known that, will have spotted that 1903, you know, that's March and we're now in May. None of these are to schedule. So they're always behind what they were hoping, I think, when they first named the next release. So actually this half year's release was codenamed 19H1 because they didn't want to tie themselves down, but actually it has started rolling out to certain machines and it is called 1903.
Yeah, the number is actually more aspirational than reality.
Yeah, it's right. All very confusing.
Yeah, let's get another email, Andy.
So next up we have an email from Robert. He says, I help a visually impaired fellow with his tech kit and we have a question regarding Netflix. He has a Lady A compatible TV, and he can also use Lady A to find out what is on the main channels in the evening. But Lady A does not give details of Netflix programs, maybe because Amazon sees them as a competitor. There are phone apps that would provide this information, but not in a very user-friendly way using the phone's screen reader. He has a in-your-pocket mobile and an Android one. Do you know of any apps or skills that would just read out a list of that evening's Netflix programs when asked using voice? Google just refers you to a list of potential websites. That's from Bob. He's a volunteer at the Perry House Centre for the Visually Impaired.
Well, thank you for that, Robert. You know, it's lucky we've got the guy on who presents a podcast all about Amazon Echo skills. Anything for Netflix?
Yes, there is. Now, the first thing I'd say to Bob is that asking what's on Netflix tonight isn't probably a useful thing to ask any device or any, you know, web search or whatever, because there's nothing scheduled on Netflix. It's not like live TV. Netflix has thousands probably of titles at any one time. They do change from time to time, but they're always all available for you to kind of dive into and choose whichever one you like the look of. There is a brilliant skill on the Echo, though. If it's called Can I Stream That? So if you say to the A-Lady, open Can I Stream That? Then she will ask you what you're interested in seeing. So if you've got a particular movie or TV series in mind, if you say, I don't know, Back to the Future 2 or something, then she will give you all of these streaming platforms and other ways that you can get it through cable TV and that sort of thing, where you can watch Back to the Future 2 at the moment. So it's constantly updated, and that is probably where I would point you if you have an Echo, of course. Can I Stream That? If you say open Can I Stream That, and she'll ask you, and then just say your favorite thing you want to know where it can be streamed, and it'll tell you, is it on Netflix, is it on Amazon Prime, is it on HBO Go, for example. Yeah.
Wow. But I mean, that's brilliant. You're right. I mean, that's the problem. There's so many programs on there. To know what's on is really difficult because, you know, there are thousands of programs on there. And that's actually one of the biggest issues at the moment with something like Netflix. And I'm even finding, from an audio description point of view, trying to find programs that are audio described, even in the AD list on the app, it's not guaranteed that they actually have audio description, which is another new problem we seem to have encountered in the new look app that they're putting out. So, yeah, bit of a challenge.
I should also add as well, though, that you can ask the A-Lady what's on TV tonight if you want to know what's on the, you know, terrestrial channels, as it were.
Yeah,
she'll give you
every
a highlighted list.
Yeah, love that. Okay, let's get another email then.
So this next email is from Holly. She says, hi, Tech Talk team. I just wanted to send you an email about the special episode on how Tech Talk is made. I wanted to thank you for all the brilliant hints and tips. The episode was really useful and I took a lot away from it. Stephen, I know you already tweeted you, but I wanted to email to thank you firstly for doing the episode and to tell you how useful it is. I couldn't fit everything that I wanted to say into a tweet. Starting a podcast is something that Holly says she wanted to do for a while, but she had no idea where to start with it all. I wanted to create a podcast to go alongside my blog. I have ideas, but I didn't know how to put them into practice. There are tons of resources on starting a podcast, but very few on doing it when you have a visual impairment. Before listening to the show, I had heard good things about Audacity, but I had no idea on its accessibility for screen reader users, so I'm definitely going to download it and hopefully work out how to use it. Thank you for all your hints, tips, and resources. I can't explain how helpful they are. I would still have been going round in circles if it wasn't for that episode. I know that my podcast will be no Tech Talk, but I'm really excited to start something new and see where it goes. The episode was a great lesson, very informative and really interesting as always. Huge well done, guys. That's from Holly.
Oh, thanks for that, Holly. Really appreciate that. Yeah, we enjoyed making that episode, actually. And you know what? Tech Talk wasn't Tech Talk at one time, right? So it all has to start somewhere. And, you know, it just is a great opportunity, you know, just to tell your story from your own point of view or whatever it might be. And taking a blog to life that way can be lots of fun. I mean, you enjoy it. You started Dot to Dot, and you're loving that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I listened to that episode with great interest. I would probably want to add that there's a couple of platforms that are accessible and very, very affordable. So podbean.com, that's P-O-D-B-E-A-N, podbean.com is where I host Dot to Dot, and uploading a podcast and giving its title and description, etc., couldn't be easier. And my package there is $2.99 a month. So that's pretty affordable. Anchor.fm, so that's the normal spelling of Anchor, A-N-C-H-O-R.fm, is another up-and-coming platform, very, very accessible, and I think free below a certain number of listeners. So yeah, check out those two. And the one other thing I wanted to add, because you guys were talking about different mics and other setups, and whilst I'm using the ATR2100 that you guys recommend, I actually record my podcast on my phone, as you guys suggested you can do as well. And that's mm-hmm. super easy. I actually just have the microphone slightly to the side. You guys mentioned about having it, 6 inches away so that you're not on the microphone, but I have it just slightly to the side, so there's no danger of that at all. I just wanted to add that tip in there as well, and then just use the voice memos or whatever recording app you want to. Nothing could be simpler, really. And yeah, Audacity, absolutely brilliant for editing it.
Yeah, I mean, I've said in the episode I use Adobe Audition because I've used it for years, but Audacity seems really accessible, and you're doing all your edits on that, and you got on fine, don't you?
Yeah, multi-track, very accessible. If you don't like any of the default keystrokes, you can easily change them to be more intuitive for you. An infinite number of plugins to do fancy things that you might want to progress onto. But the basic getting started mode, as it were, is pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Well, listen, thank you to all of you for getting in touch. I know lots and lots of you have been emailing in. We didn't get to all of your emails this week. We will do more on next week's programme, of course, when we're back. Join us for that, if you can, on air on Freeview Channel 730 on RNIB Connect Radio. Or you can listen to us at any time on the podcast if you're there right now. Fantastic. That is it from me, Stephen Scott. Thank you. Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet, as always, thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks you. Thank you, guys.
And keep in touch on the email address once again, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'll catch you next time.